You're listening to the Speechy Side Up podcast, and today I'm joined by an incredible SLP and Augmentative and Alternative Communication Consultant, Lauren Enders. In this episode, we discuss how she uses social media to stay up to date in the field of AAC, how to get buy-in from school staff with AAC implementation, and the importance of fostering connection, not just device use.
You're listening to the Speechy Side Up podcast. This podcast will cover the flip side of traditional speech and language therapy, so you get inspired and learn from experts in the field. Here is your host, author, AAC specialist, and matcha tea lover, Vanita Litvak. She and her guests are serving up some informative and fun topics in Speechy Side Up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Speechy Side Up podcast. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. This podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment. You can also follow along on Instagram at Speechy Side Up. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Today, I have the honor of speaking with an incredible SLP and Augmentative and Alternative Communication Consultant, Lauren Enders. Lauren, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course, I'm a huge fan. I love following you on social media, and I became an even bigger fan when I saw you speak at ATIA earlier this year, because you always share such great tips for AAC. So I'm really excited for the listeners to get to know you better as well. Let's paint a picture for them. Tell us about who you are, what you do today, and how you got there.
Okay. So I am a speech language pathologist. I did my undergrad at University of Delaware and they didn't have a program then. And when I decided what I wanted to do, I was already a junior in college. And of course, at that time, University of Delaware did not have a speech program. So I actually made up my own major as closely as I could to what you would get in a typical speech program. And then I did my master's at the University of Pittsburgh. And I graduated with my master's in 1995 from the University of Pittsburgh. So it's been quite a while. When I went into the field, I thought that I wanted to be working with adult patients who had strokes and other types of neurological acquired injuries, and I came out realizing that I wanted to work with kids with physical disabilities. So when I first got my first job coming out of grad school, I worked for the Delaware County Intermediate Unit in Pennsylvania. We have intermediate units in each county that provide special services to the districts that those districts can then contract for. And I worked there for 8 years, and I had an amazing education, let's say, in my first job, where I had a program of elementary, middle school, and high school where they were physical support, kind of like resource classes. So I saw all kinds of kids with, you know, all kinds of abilities. It was just a great place to be. And then I moved in 2002 to Bucks County and moved my job as well to Bucks County Intermediate Unit, where I still work. And for the last, I don't know, maybe about 11 years, I have been a full-time augmentative communication consultant and assistive technology consultant at the Bucks County Intermediate Unit. I guess my claim to fame is maybe around 2011, 2012, I started a Pinterest site, and it kind of got out of hand and massive, but that foray into social media really changed my career. And it was the sharing of resources on Pinterest and then eventually a professional Facebook page and a Twitter feed that really have allowed me to meet all of the big players in AAC and have had the opportunity to travel and present. And social media has really completely changed my career. What I feel, you know, everybody has strengths and things they're not so great about. I think that my strength is cultivating resources and sharing them. And it is my kind of passion to do that, using social media, presenting, whatever I can do.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And I completely agree with you that, you know, your forte is like cultivating those materials, but I also think you're really, really creative as well. And there's some ideas that you've come out with that I haven't heard from anybody else before I'm like, wow, like that's really cool to hear. So I think you're also a leader as well in our field. And
thank you.
I really, really enjoy like hearing you speak. So You talked a little bit about your social media and kind of how you got started. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know how you're using it today to stay up to date with the field of AAC.
Great question. So I use social media. I would say that that's probably the best way that I stay up to date with the field of AAC right now. And the way that I use social media, a lot of it is on Facebook, believe it or not. Facebook, I kind of have a set of folks that I like to follow, and I just peruse the newsfeed every single day. And then, you know, I share and save and repost and tweet and all kinds of things. Anything that I see that I really think that other people should know about. So what I do is I kind of have a group of people, a group of pages that I make sure that I'm always following, you know, always trying to make sure that I am kind of on the pulse of what's happening. So I don't know if you want me to go into, you know, some of the blogs and the Facebook pages and things that that I'm using, but, you know, primarily right now, what I'm using most is Facebook. I also, of course, still pin to Pinterest. What I found was, although Pinterest is a really fabulous way to curate resources in a very visual way, and it has gotten better in that now you can have subheadings and, you know, the whole platform has improved. But what I have found is that there's so much information, and it's all kind of, it can be overwhelming to people that, you know, you click on a Pinterest board and there's 400 pins or there's 300 pins and, you know, where do I start? So that was why I started my professional Facebook page, which is just my name, Lauren S. Enders, MACCCSLP. And there I kind of, you know, in drips and drabs every day, I am sharing and posting things, but it's not quite as overwhelming as, you know, opening up my Pinterest site and really not knowing where to start. That being said, one of the things that I did for those who are looking for AAC information is if you do go on the Pinterest site, every board that relates to AAC actually starts with AAC. So it says, you know, AAC video examples, AAC funding, so that they are a little bit easier than maybe at one time they were to find, because I made sure that they were titled in a way that you could quickly find that they were AAC. But I can go through, so the things that I am doing currently, when I'm following blogs, of course, Practical AAC, which of course I follow as a blog, I follow on Facebook, I follow on Twitter. You know, Practical AAC for sure is the most prolific provider of excellent professional development, professional supports, as well as parent supports. It's just an unbelievable. Dr. Carol Zangari and the late Dr. Robin Parker, they started it, and it has just been a godsend, really, to the field. So, of course, I follow that as a blog. My friend Kate Ahern, who is a special educator whose specialty is teaching AAC users to how to use their systems, teaching them language using their systems. One of the most, the brightest and most compassionate folks I know. She has a blog. I would say she's much more active these days on her Facebook groups, but that blog is searchable. So even if it's something that perhaps she posted a year or two, 3 years ago, a lot of the information on there is really, really helpful. Usable information. So that's Teaching Learners with Multiple Special Needs from Kate Ahern. Of course, the AAC Girls and AAC Intervention blogs from Dr. Caroline Musselwhite. Everything there is, you know, absolutely wonderful, some phenomenal ideas. Susan Berkowitz has a blog called Kids Learn Language, and she also posts on Facebook through there some really, really good little snippets and little posts that can be shared with families or shared with teachers. Some great information there. I'm trying to look. AAC Community is a blog that I like to follow. That's something I'm super proud. Catherine Helland works for the Temple Institute on Disabilities. And Catherine was actually one of my colleagues at the Bucks County Intermediate Unit, and she's moved on and working at Temple and is doing amazing things. And she has a blog called AAC Community, where she shares lots of great information. Another thing I like to follow are parent blogs. And I think those parent blogs are very important, because we have lots of families who either are just beginning their foray into AAC with their children, or maybe they, you know, it's their children are older and they're still, you know, trying to make sure they're doing the right thing in terms of providing AAC for their children. I think it's important for those parents to have some things on social media, some blogs, some pages where they can go and get some information from other parents. And some of my favorite blogs are Hold My Words by Kim Rankin and Uncommon Sense by Dana Nieder. Dana Nieder is a mom to Maya who uses AAC and also talks. And Dana went back to school to become a speech language pathologist. So some really neat stuff there. When looking at Facebook, of course, like I said, Practical AAC, there's AAC groups. A lot of them were started by Kate Ahern. There's AAC through, I think it's Model Motivate or Motivate Model and Move Out of the Way. I don't know if I have the order correct in my head. One of my friends and a phenomenal AAC specialist is Rachel Langley, who has a professional page on Facebook. And something that I'm really, really into is using graphics and memes to share best practices in AAC because they're easily digestible. And especially with the memes, they, you know, the chuckle, it makes it a little lighter if you're trying to share some important information, but it's kind of got a funny slant to it. So Rachel, she creates some really, really beautiful graphics that you can just, she shares them freely on her Facebook page, and you can download them and print them and place them around your home or your school or your clinic. So those are wonderful. I think it's important to follow organizations like USAC, which is a division of ISAC, the International Society of Augmentative and Alternative Communication. USAC is the United States portion of that organization. Some things like policy information and really important things in the field. They're a great organization to follow also. Sometimes there's private practices that are just really good at sharing information. And I think private practices, they kind of have, you know, sometimes, you know, a benefit in that they are directly working with students on a daily basis. Someone like myself, and of course I'm in classrooms, I'm working with students, but I'm not their speech therapist. I am the consultant, so I don't have those same day in and day out experiences. So people who do, like Kate Ahern, who works directly with clients, or people in private practice, speech practices like Chickadee AAC and Dynamic Learning Associates, they really provide some really nice resources as well. So my suggestion to you would be to make sure you're liking some of these folks on Facebook so their posts pop up in your newsfeed, and maybe just take, you know, 5-10 minutes a day and just kind of scan the newsfeed, and you'll be amazed at what you find. The rest of, let's see, how am I staying up to date? Twitter is something, you know, I don't do quite as much on Twitter because I'm long-winded, as you've already learned. but Twitter, I do post some things on Twitter, and you can have some nice chats, and there's AT chats that you can follow. And there's, of course, YouTube. YouTube is a great resource. Again, looking at the people that I've already mentioned, many of them have videos and samples of therapy that you can follow on YouTube, and video can be a great way to learn.
Oh my gosh, I love all of those suggestions. I think those are really great starting points for people who are wanting to learn more about AAC, stay up to date. Some really poignant points that you brought up were following parents. I think that that's not something that a lot of people think about doing. And actually, one of my favorite posts that you recently shared was the one from a parent blog about fostering connection, which we're going to talk about later in this episode. And Rachel Langley's memes, that is a great idea. So I'm going to have to keep an eye out for those as well. So thank you so much for sharing all of those.
You're welcome. I actually have a Pinterest. What I've tried really hard to, I think I'm going to organize it a little better, because right now it's just one giant Pinterest board that's, it's memes, posters, and something else. I forget. It starts with AAC and it's memes, posters, and handouts or something like that. And pretty much anything that I've seen, whether it's a meme that somebody's come up with or it's one of Rachel Langley's, you know, really gorgeous graphics with quotes and best practices. I have all of them saved on that one Pinterest board. So you can just kind of click on there and look through. Now I do plan to go back in, and now you can use subheadings. So when I have a few minutes, I'm going to go and organize a little better. But right now it's just kind of a big conglomeration of some really great printable or shareable images.
That's so amazing. Oh, how cool is that? All right. Well, let's talk about your go-to resources for AAC implementation.
Okay. There are a lot. So some of them are new and some of them are not new. And one thing I like to mention is that there really has been a fabulous explosion in terms of the provision of resources for just general AAC implementation. And what we're starting to see is that all of the communication device companies and the app developers with really robust AAC apps, pretty much all of them are now offering either blogs or Facebook pages with really great implementation suggestions that don't specifically relate to their own products. Sure, they offer additional information about support for their own products. That has to be there, of course. But I think it's important that that people really start exploring resources from some of the robust AAC companies. Like we have Prenke Rahmic Company, Saltillo Corporation, which is now part of the Prenke Rahmic family of companies. So that's awesome. They've combined. Toby Dynavox. There's Smartbox, who in the United States, we don't really know so much about them yet. They have the Grid 3 and Grid for iPads. They have some really great AAC solutions. They are a UK company, but we're starting to see a lot more in the United States that they're being represented here. So what I like to suggest to people is don't worry about whether you don't have one of their devices. Still explore their resources. So PRC Saltillo has launched something called Explore AAC, which is a website which is really fabulous for people that are new to AAC, whether that's a parent or whether it's a teacher or a paraprofessional or a therapist. There's just some really nice resources there. There's something similar called Simple AAC, which is put out by Smartbox. One of my absolute favorite resources that is even more exciting because in the last couple of years it's come down in price considerably is AAC Language Lab. AAC Language Lab is an implementation support website from the Prenke Rahmic Corporation. Now, while there are additional supports specific to their products, the lesson plans and the implementation supports, and there's now a screener, an AAC language screener for where to start, built right into this subscription service. It used to be $84 a year, and to be quite honest, I felt that it was worth $84 a year, even if you didn't have any students using a Prenke Rahmic device like an Accent or let's say the Lamp Words for Life app. It has just gotten better and better. It had an overhaul in the last, I think, maybe 6 months. Jane Odom is just phenomenal. She's in charge of the language lab. Her ideas, she is creative and smart and fun. So the language lab at I think it's $9.95 a year now. It is just one of the best deals out there. And I think lots more people should be using it and understanding that it's not just for users of Prenke Rahmic Corporation products. There's the Assistiveware blog and Core Classroom. Assistiveware are the folks that put out Proloquo to Go, and they have really, really stepped up their implementation supports. They always had some. I think that lately there's been more and more and more, and it's really high quality information that they are providing. Again, information that applies to Proloquo to Go, but also applies to just, AAC implementation in general and best practices.
I want to take a quick break to tell you about this free resource library that you can access today at fusionwebclinic.com. In that resource library, they have a soap note kit. They also have a pediatric therapy materials bundle, And if you're thinking about seeing clients privately or starting your own private practice, they have a clinic logo design guide. They also have a guide for choosing the right EMR system. Actually, Fusion Web Clinic is an EMR system. And if you'd like to request a demo, you can do that. If you love it, then you can also get $50 off your first month. All you have to do is say that you heard about the software on the Speechy Side Up podcast.
So talking about, you know, we were talking about the language lab, and one of the things of the language lab, besides identifying kind of language targets, is specific activities. You know, a lot of times people are really not sure that even once they decide what their language goals are, well, how do I do that with a device user? One of the best things that I ever heard, so one of the other people that I do follow is Gail Van Tatenhove. Now she's not quite as active professionally on Facebook, but she does have a blog, and there's lots that you can find, you know, that you can Google her resources. She has a website as well. So one of the things that I learned from her many years ago, when I first became an AAC consultant, is I went to one of her workshops, and in that workshop, she said, AAC therapy is just language therapy. And I think so many of us that are speech and language pathologists who don't have much experience in AAC implementation get really freaked out because, you know, we don't know how to use these devices. We don't know what we're doing. But really, when you get down to it, we know how to teach language as speech and language pathologists. And that's all this is. But so the AAC language lab, as well as the Saltillo chat corner, are both full of actual activities. You know, how would you use bubbles? How would you use a book? How would you use this particular mobile app? So if you are looking for actual things to do, actual activities, those two, the AAC Language Lab and the Saltillo Chat Corner, are wonderful. I personally believe that we need to do a way, way better job at making sure that our language instruction, and this is really no different than any kind of learning, we have to do a better job at making these activities that we do engaging. Mm-hmm. You know, language is not, it's not a demand, it's not a test. We want to be teaching language through interaction, and that interaction needs to be engaging to make sure they're getting everything that they can. I'm still looking at my list here of go-to resources. The Toby Dynavox Learning Hub, there are lots of resources from Toby Dynavox. When I talked about people's names in particular, I think it's really great to kind of make a list for yourself of all of the folks that you like to follow. So, you know, I like to follow Rachel Langley. I like to follow Chris Bouguet of the Talking with Tech podcast. And, you know, have that list and kind of every once in a while, just Google and see what you can find. Also on Teachers Pay Teachers, many of those wonderful folks that, you know, I've mentioned or perhaps you already know about have Teachers Pay Teachers site and may have resources that for a couple dollars or even some of them for free may be super helpful. Just going through my list, my notes here. For handouts, besides Gail Van Tatenhove, Linda Burkhart has lots of handouts on her website. Particularly really great handouts for those kids that have, you know, the most complex bodies, you know, and with her pod resources and in just general AAC resources in general for that kind of population. I think that she's a really great person to take a look at. So the next ones that I have, some additional people. Deanna Wagner is a great person to follow. You can follow her on Facebook. Podcasts Talking with Tech. And okay, so the final ones in terms of, and certainly this is by no means, I'm sure that I have missed things, and I apologize to all my AAC friends if I missed you, which is a worry because there's so much good stuff and so many good people out there. But when you're looking for AAC implementation resources, some of the best out there are a few that they look at kind of training communication partners and just talking in generally about best practices. So one is Project CORE. Project CORE comes out of the Center for Literacy and Disability Studies from Dr. Karen Erickson and Dr. David Copenhaver at UNC Chapel Hill. And there's really kind of two parts to that to that group and the information that they provide on both, you know, looking at Project Core, and Project Core gives you all kinds of communication boards and best practices with core vocabulary, phenomenal. There's modules that you can take. It is all completely free. The other side, which is not part of our discussion today, but really important to know about, is we really need to be considering literacy with everyone. So even our most complex learners. And if you are looking at how would you look to start teaching reading or writing with our most complex learners in terms of cognitive complexity as well as physical complexity, then the Center for Literacy and Disability Studies is where you want to look, because they are at the forefront of research and explaining techniques on how to get that started. Another resource that's phenomenal, you heard me mention Gail Van Tatenhove, is Power AAC. Gail teamed up with PATN, which is the Pennsylvania Training and Technical Assistance Network, which is part of the Department of Education in Pennsylvania, and she produced a series of modules which include pretests and post-tests and videos and transcripts. It's all completely free. And Power AAC is... it is simply, teaching positive and the best practices in augmentative communication implementation. So awesome. Another is Tabby Jones. And Tabby, I'm so sorry. I can never pronounce your name. So I think it's Wolber. I'm not sure, but she's awesome. She has amazing resources. And one of those resources is Master PAL Training. And that is a whole series of modules on how to be a communication partner. They are free. You can find them posted on Practical AAC. One of the things that's amazing about Practical AAC is that search bar. You can search for whatever it is that you need, and they will come up by people's names, topics, whatever. So definitely take a look at that Master PAL training from Tabby. I think I hit a lot of them. Another one thing I do like to also share are short explainer videos. So I like the Aided Language Explained by Chris Bouguet, which is a great kind of little lighthearted, cartoonish example of why we need to be modeling, why we need aided language. And then if we're looking at why core vocabulary is important, I like the Language Stealers HD video by Michael Brian Reed. So I think, in a nutshell, that's a lot of, a lot of what I, what are my go-tos. I am also a fan of one-pagers. I think that when things get beyond a page or two, they can kind of be set aside. So if we can provide information that's glanceable, that can help. That's why I developed that the boot camp, do's and don'ts, and there's lots of other things like that out there. So, I am a fan of one pagers and memes, like I said. The other thing, just conferences. I encourage people, if you can go to a conference, Talking AAC is probably one of my favorites in terms of being a specific AAC-related conference. It is a warm and friendly atmosphere with just a fabulous bunch of people. It's a great place to spend a few days learning. So if you can get to Talking AAC, which is run by my buddy Rachel Langley, if you can get there, I was not fortunate enough to be able to go last year, but I was there the year before, and what a wonderful experience. So if you can get there, it's in Michigan. And then, of course, Closing the Gap and ATIA are assistive tech conferences that have full strands of AAC presentations, including pre-conference. I'm going to do a pre-conference, actually, I'm pretty excited about, at Closing the Gap this year, which is something that I never really expected to be able to do. I often talk about the features of different AAC apps. Apps are so prevalent right now in AAC because they're so easily accessible, and iPads are typical devices, but it can be really confusing about what you should be choosing. So I am actually doing a full day pre-conference on AAC apps and what their shared features are and what the unique features of each app and, you know, what kind of person that might be helpful for. But the super exciting part, and I'm thanking Closing the Gap, they are actually going to provide me with iPads with all of those apps on them. It's big. So for the people that come to that pre-conference workshop. So I've done trainings on, you know, these features and the apps, but I've never really had the ability to actually have people exploring them as we go through them. So that's something super exciting. And that's happening this year, Closing the Gap in September.
That's so cool. Well, congratulations. I would love to make it, but September is kind of cutting it close. Maybe next year. I was writing down like all of these notes. You shared so many great resources. I was going to say, if anybody's listening to this in the car, you might want to pause and wait till you get home so that you can write some of this stuff down, but also it'll be in the show notes. Some things that I like pointed out were Project Core, Power AAC, and the MasterPal training. Like, those are free modules. So it's, you know, we don't realize how many resources are out there for AAC. That's why I love following you, and, you know, the listeners can actually see why now, because you synthesize all of that information.
Oh, so there's actually, you know, now that you mentioned that, I do want to mention one other set of trainings that are offered by Dr. Jill Center and Matt Baud. And I don't know if anybody's heard of the S'mores mnemonic, which is it's an implementation protocol, a coaching protocol. And one thing that I have discovered is, just like we can't expect users of AAC to learn language without language being modeled for them, we really can't expect parents and teachers and therapists and paraprofessionals to really have any idea what they're doing modeling if that modeling isn't modeled for them. Mm-hmm. And there is a protocol that was developed by Dr. Jill Center and Matt Baud. They're in Chicago with the mnemonic S'mores. It's called Partner Augmented Input. And they do trainings at different conferences, and they do trainings, you know, across the country. And I have actually used their protocol of working with, it doesn't even take that long. It's like 15, if you follow their protocol, it's like 15 hours of support to folks, where you go and you model for them, and then you watch them and you make notes, and, you know, you kind of take data on the things that they're doing and what they could be improving on. And it is just exceptionally effective. So while, you know, so if you get a chance to see or hear Dr. Jill Center and Matt Baud present about that, that's another really fabulous group of folks to follow. You can find, I believe they might have done, there might be an archived webinar on USAC that goes through their partner augmented input communication training, their partner training.
Oh, great. Perfect. Well, I know that you work in the schools. You and I both have similar positions. I started last year, so I'm newer to it. And I am curious, as I'm sure many other people are, how you get buy-in from school staff with AAC implementation. What are your tips and tricks?
I will tell you off the bat that I am not 100% successful. Now, I know that seems negative, but I just want people to understand that some of the challenges that you may be having in your buildings or your clinics or wherever you're working are probably things that are happening across the country and across the globe. So, you know, but there are things that we can try that can be effective. You are not going to change the hearts and minds of every single person that you mm-hmm. attempt to encourage or educate, but the best that you can do is kind of follow those best practices and try to do things that you know might be likely to succeed. So one of the things that I have found is that the absolute best indicator of getting team buy-in is getting administrator buy-in.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It is huge. It is huge. When the administrator, so whether that's the special education supervisor or whether that's the principal, when they understand the importance of these best practices and opportunities for our kids with AAC, it is dramatically different. So I'm going to really quickly talk about some things that I do for buy-in. First of all, I recommend that schools post AAC memes and handouts and posters around the school. I tell people to actually take the handouts and memes and post them on the insides of bathroom stalls because you know, well, it's kind of captivated and captured reading there. So, and then to rotate them, you know, throw them out and don't save them. That's gross. But to throw them out afterwards and put up some new ones, but to all through the building to have AAC be visible. There's also things we can do with contests where you can have contests where you people grab videos or pictures. There's a contest that Kate Ahern runs on social media called #SeeMyAAC. And really what she asks for is either photos or videos of people using their AAC systems, quote, in the wild. So out and about, whether that's in, you know, somewhere in the building or whether that's out in the community. But something similar could easily be done in a school or a clinic or, you know, kind of anywhere to really kind of make AAC visible and normalize it, really. So contests like, you know, where you have somebody judging, which is the best picture, and maybe getting prizes from administrators for winners, maybe having typical peers as well as peers in special education classrooms, teachers, power professionals be judges. And there's more about that. I'm not sure if I have anything. I probably have some of that somewhere on my professional site, but perhaps I'll post some more. The other is, you know, seeing if you can implement a coaching protocol, if you have that ability, you know, if you can get into these classrooms and actually model for the teachers and the power professionals and then be able to give them some feedback. The other thing that I do is go in and do peer presentations. So, you know, let's say that we have a child who's using an augmentative communication device. One example I like to use is a little guy that I think I'd been working with him since kindergarten, but he was in first grade. He was a talker, but his speech was pretty unintelligible, so he had a device as well. And what we did was we went into his regular education classroom where he spent a good bit of the time, and I did a presentation for the kids in the class, and I sat up at the front. Now, he was eager to be the star, so he sat right next to me with his talker, and the way that I started this presentation for the peers, and I do this, I've done this multiple times in different classrooms with kids with different kinds of devices, and the first thing I do is I look around the room at all the kids, and they could be anywhere from, you know, kindergarten to usually fifth or sixth grade is what I've done these for. And I look around the room and I'm like, oh my gosh, some of you are using assistive technology. And they all look at each other and I'll say, well, assistive technology, that's when we have tools that help us do things that would otherwise be difficult. So then I look around and I say, somebody's using it. And they all look at each other and they're all confused. And then we talk about the fact that glasses are assistive technology. And then I, you know, usually one of them will realize that, oh, well, glasses, well, then maybe hearing aids are assistive technology. And I'm like, yes, they are. And then I say, well, some people, their mouths don't, you know, just like your eyes or your ears may not work as well as they should. And we need tools to help us when they don't. You know, sometimes people's mouths don't work as well either. And it's not that they don't have things to say, but maybe their mouth just isn't working so well. And then we go into what augmentative communication is and why we use it. But there's some really key points that I share with their peers. One is that their peer is likely the same age or older than them. And to try to really combat, I'm not sure, you know, I'm sure pretty much everybody, we have this mothering thing that just happens. And we tend to talk to those with disabilities like we're babying them. And that's not what we want to do. So I mentioned that, you know, that we'll talk about the age and the fact that, you know, we talk to them just like any other friend. I also talk about the fact that that is either their voice or one of their voices. And just like somebody can't kind of reach and grab your throat while you're talking, we can't just reach and grab our friends' devices. We can ask, however, if we can talk to them on their devices. And if they say yes, then we can use them. So things like that that I share with the kids, and the kids absolutely love it. And what I suggest if you do something like that is to absolutely invite as many administrative personnel as you can. Invite the superintendent, invite the principal, invite the special education supervisor in charge of the students in that building. But the more visibility you can get with administrators and the more administrative support you can get, the bigger changes and the more buy-in you will see. I absolutely experienced this firsthand, and the most change I've seen in teachers are ones where the administrators are allowing me access to those teachers and paraprofessionals for me to model for them and train them.
Oh my gosh, so good. I love all of those suggestions, and a lot of them were new. Like, I haven't heard about putting up posters. I think that's a fantastic idea, and getting administrative buy-in. I could definitely see why that would be the single best indicator of successful AAC implementation. You always think that it's finding one person in the classroom who is on board, and then kind of making them like the, you know, coaching them, and then that they're, I know eagerness kind of rubs off on everybody else, but I could definitely see where that administrative buy-in is super, super important. I love that. And then the peer presentations, what a fantastic idea. And that's so great how the kids,
fun.
Yeah, I could see the kids being like, what? Like, I don't have AT. And then realizing, and it's like a light bulb goes off.
Yeah. You know? It's really cool. The one piece that I didn't mention that I think is really key also is that the other recommendation that I make is that if we have a child with a device or a communication board, whatever it is that they're using, to take that board or take their main screen and give a paper copy of that screen or page to every student in the class. And that the teachers start modeling for everybody. Because what I try to impress upon teachers and family members is, you know, the more you model, it's not just, the modeling doesn't just teach you how to use AAC. It also reinforces auditory comprehension because you are pointing to symbols while talking. So almost guaranteed in any class, there are going to be kids at different levels. And there are going to be kids with differing processing times. And pointing to symbols, using aided language, using modeling while you are talking helps those kids, even if they are not AAC users. So I recommend always that they choose, if they have multiple kids with devices, just choose one of them that is the most robust and use their home screen, or if, you know, whatever it is, but then to make a copy and have a copy on every student's desk, whether that's in regular education, whether that's in a special education class, and to also have those boards all over the school. So outside every doorway, on the playground, especially if they can blow it up and make it, you know, a big sign. But really, we need to make AAC normalized and visible. And, you know.
I love that.
Teach more.
I love that. All of the suggestions. I'm just typing down, make AAC normalize. That's awesome. So another thing that I saw recently that you posted, I mentioned it earlier, was that blog post about fostering connection and not just device use. So can you talk about that?
Right. So I took some notes on this, and really when you look at the definition of communication, we think, most people, what I find, if I were to do a sampling, whether it's, you know, parents or paraprofessionals or teachers, for some reason, the main thought when you say, well, why does this child need a device? And or if I go in and I do a set meeting, so I'm doing the meeting to try to determine the right supports for any child. Invariably, what I get back is he needs to tell me what he wants and needs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, it is just rampant. And of course, he does or she does. They do need to do that. But that is not, you know, that is not all that communication is. And that's what I think is often being missed, where that is the prime goal of everybody and they're not looking beyond that. So if you look at the definition of communication, it's a process by which information is exchanged by individuals through a common system of symbols, signs, or behavior. But there's another part to it. And the second part is personal rapport. That, you know, communication is about interaction between people. So, you know, it's not just about having your needs met. You know, communication is about interaction. And when you look at the Communication Bill of Rights, and there's some really great versions of the Communication Bill of Rights out there. There's one by Kate Ahern. Recently, a customized one was posted by Karen Baca. Her son Christian uses a device, and she created a unique Bill of Rights that was just related to him and what was important now that he's an adult. But if you look at the Communication Bill of Rights, the first one is not to be able to share what you need in that moment. It is the right to interact socially, maintain social closeness, and build relationships. And that is where we really, I think, in many cases are falling short. Another thing that I talked about, so the keynote that I did for AAC in the Cloud, which there is another resource that's fabulous. So AAC in the Cloud is a free online conference that happens every June, and it's put out by the makers of the Cough Drop application, which is a robust AAC app that runs on all platforms. And the folks at Cough Drop have been kind enough to organize this fabulous, fabulous conference with amazing speakers, all who do this for free because they want to improve access to supports for AAC users and AAC supporters and communication partners. So all of those sessions for AAC in the Cloud are recorded and are available to watch. The one that I did the keynote this year, I thought about, well, what, you know, the typical kinds of things I present on didn't seem like keynote material. You know, I present on, you know, AAC implementation best practices. I present on, you know, activities that are engaging and fun, but they just didn't seem like they were keynote kind of material. So I thought, you know, and I had some, you know, some help in kind of identifying, you know, where I should go. And it, I came up with the fact that connection is the heart of communication. And in my research for that presentation, I found some really great information from a psychologist where they talked about the fact that there is a correlation between a feeling of social closeness and connection and mental health, but not only mental health, but actual physical well-being and lifespan. So these things, you know, I don't think that they are really considered heavily enough. And I think one of the things that happens is because there tends to be this kind of uber focus only on wants and needs. And again, I would never suggest that we don't teach someone how to advocate for themselves and what they need. We, of course, need to do that. But stopping there is really problematic and is rampant. We need to teach people how to ask questions, how to continue a conversation, how to say something that might engage a communication partner. So looking at all of the different functions of communication in addition to expressing wants and needs. So, you know, asking questions. I can't tell you how many kids that I have seen graduate, exit the system at 21, and all they can say is, I want a cookie. And we just need to do a better job. They need to be able to say that, and they need to be able to do a whole lot more. So, you know, the key thoughts about fostering connection and communication as connection, not just about using your device, is, you know, that communication, another thing to think about, communication is not compliance. So many times, especially with our friends on the autistic spectrum, I see things where, you know, I'm told that, well, he's just being manipulative. I've heard him say that before. Well, no, it may be that there's sensory overload, or maybe there's a need for sensory input, or maybe he's in pain. There are so many factors that can influence somebody's ability in that moment to use their language that it very well may be that they may have been able to do it before, but they truly may not be able to do it in that moment. And we really have to not look at communication as compliance, as a demand, that we need to be cautious when teaching language that, again, this is about connection, that we should be modeling and interacting. We should not be testing them the whole time. I walk into classrooms and what's this color? What's this color? What's your name? Would you want to communicate if you were being kind of shouted a barrage of questions and being tested all day? Probably not.
No.
And the last is just that we need to include families, that we are only with, you know, whether it is a child or an adult, you know, whether it's a child in school a bunch of the day, if it's adult in a, you know, a day program, or an adult that's living in a group home, or some kind of, you know, nursing facility, we need to be supporting the people that are supporting these folks using AAC beyond whatever, you know, instructional or, you know, whatever that context is. So providing family support, bringing family members in, modeling for them. Deanna Wagner has, I think it's an out and about in Arizona, hopefully not too much outside in the summer. I think it's been like 118 there. But Deanna does these great out and abouts and Brandy Wetlands where they bring out the AAC users to different parts of the community, and they have activities and they can connect with one another, and then the families can connect with one another and have support.
That's so cool.
Some really good stuff. That's something that I would really love to see more developed where I am. We don't really have that going on, and you know, I would love to do it, but you know, my time is limited. So I'm hoping to come up with some kind of solution where those things can be happening in our community, just like they are in Deanna's and Brandy's.
Yeah, that is really cool. And I think that kind of leads into our game, because the game that I came up for you was What Would Lauren Do? Because I just think you're so creative. And so I reached out to my Instagram followers and asked them if they had any questions for you. Although they didn't know specifically who I was talking to, I told them it was someone big in AAC who I really admire. So they had some questions for you. And one of them was, how do you help families that do not have time or buy-in to support AAC use and trial devices? And I love that suggestion that you just came up with. Was there anything else you wanted to add to that?
I think for families, I think if you can bring them in, just even if it's once, to one of my favorite examples, I think a lot of times families, they really don't even understand. Some of them do, but some of them don't really understand how well their child is able to use AAC. And if you can have some time in the room with them, even if it's that you bring them in for a half an hour at the end of the school day, or you know, if you're able to even go to their home or have them meet you in the community, and you can interact where you are modeling on the device, they're seeing what their child is providing back. I had a situation where I had a parent enter a meeting. It was a follow-up set meeting where the parent was actually quite unhappy that we had increased their child's array of symbols on his main page by quite a lot. And she was furious. And we had talked about it, but I guess maybe she didn't understand what that was going to look like. And she came in, you know, guns blazing and ready to advocate, which I completely understand. But it just so happened that she couldn't find a babysitter. And her little guy, he was in kindergarten. He was on the autistic spectrum, really awesome, smart kiddo. Her little guy, so while she is kind of, you know, really, really hot and angry and explaining why she feels that it should be the way that it was and all that, her son came up to the device that was between her and her husband and started using it with that page and using it beautifully. And she just stopped. She just completely stopped and then just sat for a little while. And then her and her husband, they were just like, we didn't know. So I think that whenever possible, that we start interacting with those kids, with their devices, where along with the family, so that the family can actually see what that looks like.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. And I love that story.
It's one of my most memorable stories.
That's awesome. Well, that was from Kate MCD. I don't think I said that. So Kate, thank you so much for your question. Oops. And I'm going to give you two more questions. So the next one is from MSVD34. And I believe it's a she asked, would you recommend a strategy focusing more on a word of the week or function?
Oh, I probably would do both.
Yeah. Not one or the other. Exactly.
Yeah, I probably would do both. Yeah, if possible.
Yeah, great suggestion. And then the last one, this is such a great name, Raised on Chicken Carbonara. Oh, man. I think it's a she as well. Asked, how would you order a complex coffee order? And I'm assuming it's with your AAC device or with an AAC device.
You know what? That's something I'm really glad that was asked. I'm really glad that was asked. So one of the things that we have really gotten much, much better at in recent years, let's say even in the last decade, is understanding that core vocabulary is really important. And it's really important because those are the words, those core words are the ones that we can put together in novel ways to kind of say whatever we want. However, in learning about CORE. I think that we have lost, in some cases with some folks, have lost the realization that for quick and efficient and social communication, we also need those pre-stored messages. They need to be there. Think about hallway communication. By the time you use your device to come up with something novel, the person is all the way down the hall.
Yeah.
So there really needs to be a balance. You know, there should be, you know, a good set of really quick and easy hits. And something like a complex coffee order is something that I would think would absolutely, whether you have it in completely or whether you have all the pieces to that coffee order that person might use, and then they just combine those pieces, you know, whether it is the size, you know, they could have a page that has the different sizes, the different latte or mock. I'm not a coffee drinker, so I can't even come up with examples, but you know, where you might have a page that has all of those that you can then put together, but that you're not having to spell. Because if you think about it, those are the kinds of things you might be having to spell. And you have plenty of users that can't spell at all. So I would absolutely consider having those fully put in as phrases, and then also having the individual pieces in there should there be a change in their order or they change their mind.
Yeah, I love that suggestion. I'm thinking of a client that I had that had ALS, and at that stage, we're doing a lot of phrase-based because this was someone who had good literacy skills before and needs to be able to like order prescriptions. So yep. We had a page specifically for prescriptions. And then if she had to write out all of those names, and she was great because she made me stay there while she called the pharmacy to test out if it was working. And it was definitely a bumpy road. Like she would call and they would be like, hello, hello. And she'd try to use her device. And so we'd have to brainstorm again and go back and reprogram and say, can you wait a second while I'm typing? It was really interesting
experience.
Yeah, it was really cool and you know, helped me to empathize like what they're going through, because we can program as much as, you know, possible, but it kind of goes back to being with the family and showing them what their child can do. You don't really know unless like you actually sit down with them and go through the process with them.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for all of these amazing, amazing resources. I hope we mentioned everybody. It seems like you gave a lot of shout outs, but if not, we'll definitely add them to the show notes. And if people are not following you already, where can they find you?
I'd say the best two places to find me would probably be my professional Facebook page, which is Lauren S. Enders, MACCCSLP. And the Pinterest site, which again, all of the AAC boards start with AAC. So there's tons of boards there. There's app boards. And I will say that, you know, in my crazy life and with my presenting and my full-time job, the Pinterest site outside of AAC is not as updated as it used to be. So when you look at all these app posts and things like that, there's going to be a lot of dead links in there. And one day I'll get in there and clean them up. But the AAC posts are very relevant. So looking for the AAC boards on my Pinterest site, and that is, the Pinterest site is also Lauren S. Enders, MACCCSLP. And then you can follow me on Twitter. I don't do as much on Twitter. Like I said, I'm kind of long-winded, so that 140 characters isn't really the best match for me. But I do try to post some things there. And then I kind of, I'm out and about presenting. So if you are, you know, at a conference, whether it's locally and I happen to be speaking there, or whether it's, I'm at ATIA and Closing the Gap typically every year. ATIA is held every year in Orlando in the end of January, early February. So if you're looking for something warm, that's a great AT conference to go to. Closing the Gap is a phenomenal conference also that happens in Minneapolis at the end of September in Minnesota. And then, you know, like webinars and things like that, you can kind of find me around, out and about.
Awesome. Well, like I said, this is such an honor, and I was so nervous to say hi to you at ATIA, but I hope if I see you again in the future that I
can. You don't need to be nervous.
Muster up the courage to say hello. You've definitely helped check off one of my bucket list items, and I know that the listeners are just going to love hearing all of this information from you. So thank you again for coming on.
You're most welcome.
All right. Until next time.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Do you know the number one reason this podcast keeps going? It's because of your positive reviews. I promise I read every single review and even do a little happy dance and sometimes cry, but always think, yes, this is still helping someone. So if you found this episode to be helpful at all, can you do me a favor and take a screenshot or leave a positive review? That helps the podcast in so many ways I can't even begin to describe. But to start, it helps to spread the word and get more inspirational guests on the show. It also encourages me to keep showing up and serving you so you can stop reinventing the wheel and start feeling part of a larger SLP community. Not to mention, I will be your best friend forever. So if you've taken the time to leave a positive review, or if you've taken a screenshot and shared it with your friends on social media, thank you from the bottom of my heart. It's because of you that this podcast continues to grow and keep going. Love you guys, and thank you so much for being part of this journey with me.